beautiful human, thanks for letting us into your ears today. We are about to talk with Tinashe and the Cheat Codes. A lot of life being lived between all of them. The guys of the Cheat Codes have a brand new album out, Hellraisers Part 1. It is the first part of a three-part series we will discuss. Please subscribe to this podcast and share it with those you care about. I beg you. Okay, here we go. Hello, beautiful human. My name is Zach. That's Dan. And we welcome Tinashe.
Hey.
Kind of.
Hello, hello, hello. How's it going?
The Cheat Codes should be joining us maybe soon. Who knows? Things are okay. How are you?
I can't complain. I've been doing very well.
Hey, you've been pretty freaking busy. Why? Are you forcing yourself to be busy, or do you feel deep down like this organic, natural want to get out there and make art?
I personally love being busy. I love working and making new things and collaborating and doing shows and performing. And so this last year, the adjustment of not being able to like do as many shows or even just be as active as I have been in the past was a big transition. So I'm excited to finally be able to be busy again.
You have the record Lean On Me, which
yes.
It is not a take on the original Lean On Me. It is
a
fresh version. But you also released an amazing cover of I'm Every Woman. You also have another record, Love Line, right?
Like, yep. You've been doing a lot.
You've been busy. So are you writing during quarantine and then emerging with stuff ready to share? Or how do these collaborations happen, like with the Cheat Codes?
Yeah, for me, quarantine was the perfect time to take it upon myself to like dig deeper into the creative process, to kind of take it farther with art, to be able to do some more experimental stuff, to try some new things myself sonically, and to, of course, have more collaboration. I think artists were more down to collaborate because we were already sending things back and forth in the quarantine than maybe they were pre-quarantine, because everyone's really busy. It's hard to get people in the same studio or focused on the same thing. So collaborations were really easy over quarantine. Everyone was like locked in. So for me, it was really fun to be able to do like a few of those and to be able to make songs that are multiple genres. I never like to stick to like one particular sound. I feel like as a human being and as an artist, I have a lot of range. So yeah, I think the quarantine was a great time to just become a better artist, better person.
How does this record with the Cheat Codes kind of help showcase your range, and maybe not where you're going, but, or maybe it is where you're going.
Yeah. I mean, I love this record with the Cheat Codes. I think it's really special because it really encompasses, I feel like, the energy that we want to bring post 2020. If we're all, you know, going through this kind of collective trauma, I guess, or this big change in our lives, whether it be just being locked down, you know, dealing with coronavirus and the aftermath. I think a lot of us have felt like some sense of heaviness over the course of this last year. A lot of us have really been kind of going through it in our own ways. So just acknowledging that, but at the same time, trying to bring happiness. The song is really about like being there for one another and friendship and love and like togetherness. And I think that those are themes that we really want to celebrate this year. And we want everyone to continue that positive energy and that camaraderie and being able to rely on one another. So I think the song is really special.
Are you perfect timing. Are you getting the record when it's done, or are you getting production and writing to it? What is the process like?
Every collaboration is different. With this song, I heard the chorus and the production already, and then I wrote like my verse, and then the kind of duet part was created from there. So it was really kind of like a step-by-step process, but they had the hook already, and so they already had like the general theme. And I was like, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense. This is totally what I would like to sing about. So then the collaboration kind of goes from there. I think they sent it to like my management, and it was just boom, bam, that simple.
How freeing has it been in your career since you've gone independent? Like, would you have these same opportunities if you were still signed?
Honestly, I think I've been able to be 20 times more collaborative now that I've been an independent artist, being with a major label is amazing because you're able to work with a lot of new people and get your budgets and all those things that major labels provide. But at the same time, I think it's a business. And so in order to kind of go through all of the big machine that a record label is, it's harder to get as many collaborations out or just as many records out. So since I've been independent, I've really been in control of every move that I make, and every release that I put out has been really fun and exciting. I love just dropping music and not like overthinking it. So being independent has been really great for that.
Yeah, is that freeing or scary? The ability to
for me, it's been really liberating, and it's also kind of inspired me to be, I think, a better artist, because there is more, I guess, focus and pressure on me. And I think I thrive under pressure. I love having all of the responsibility of my career be in my control. It makes me kind of rise up to the opportunity and like work harder.
I totally understand that. I really do. Like, there is this like comfort that comes with having like a big machine there to kind of guide you, and you get comfortable in letting them drive the ship, you know?
And, absolutely.
But at the same time, like, that complacency and that comfort is what eternally can hurt you if you don't like wake up to it.
I agree. I think I've become a way better artist since going independent. And I think that it was a really crucial and important part of my career journey, being able to go from this place where I learned a lot being signed, and I was able to do so many things and travel and, you know, go on tour with amazing artists. But now I have all that experience, all that knowledge, and I can take that into just being the best artist that I can possibly be and make the best art and like that be the core of it. So that's really special and really fun.
Your story is pretty crazy. You grew up in Kentucky, right? And your parents are professors?
Yeah, I was born in Kentucky. I didn't actually grow up there though, but yeah, I was born in Kentucky, but my parents are both professors, which is kind of ironic because I didn't go to college. So I definitely took a different path than everyone else in my family.
You grew up in California, right? Like did you guys move here and they actually work? Like, they work at two California universities.
Yeah, absolutely. We moved here when I was 7 or 8 years old, I think. So I was in first grade. I just finished first grade when we moved out here. And for me, I felt like I was finally able to pursue the type of things that I really loved to do. Even as a kid, I loved acting and singing and being on stage and in front of the camera. So, you know, moving to LA, I was able to go to auditions and it just was much more easily accessible to me. So it was really awesome that my parents were so supportive of my career from such a young age.
Where do you think that comes from? Because they are obviously intellectuals as they are professors.
Yeah.
But your dad is a professor of acting, so he does have some creativity within him.
Totally. I mean, the theater professor in him, I think, understands the love of performing. So that first and foremost. But I think aside from that, I think I just give them really great credit for, I guess, following their intuition or just trusting that in me or in the, it's hard to say what exactly gave them that the foresight or the trust to be able to allow me to pursue it from so young, but I'm very thankful that they were able to do that because yeah, it changed my life
for the better. I mean, I give them a lot of credit because the truth is, you know, they're professors and everybody knows that if you are a professor at a college and you have a kid, you get a pretty dope discount on college education.
And my two brothers are in the college system. Like, they're there now. They're using it.
So they get to take advantage.
Yes, absolutely.
Isn't your brother doing music? Didn't you collab with him, or am I making that up?
No, you did. My brother Tulani actually is making music under the stage name Quiet Child, which is what his name means. And you know, it's really cool that he's able to make art as well, and we're able to do stuff together. Like, that's just so fun. I love my family, so it's like perfect.
And correct me if I'm wrong, your name means God, or we are God?
It means God is with us.
God is with us.
In Shona. Yeah, my dad's from Zimbabwe, so that's where we all get our names from.
Correct me again if I'm wrong, like, you're first generation, right?
Yep, I am. On my dad's side, my mom is American, but my dad has moved here when he was also 7 years old. So wow. Yeah, pretty cool.
That's pretty baller. And now he's a professor. And now look at his daughter and his children.
it's pretty cool just knowing how that generation has been able to, the trajectory from my dad, yeah, coming over here with nothing, not even being a citizen, to now, you know, all the things that we have. We're very lucky. So it's very exciting.
He puts things into perspective, right? And it gives new meaning and definition to challenges.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that having gratitude and being able to put life in perspective is always really amazing. And I think another thing why coronavirus, or I guess this last year, was important was because it really helped us all put life into perspective and really refocus on the things that are important. So yeah, so I feel good.
What is important as we embark, as we, I guess we're midway through 2021. So what is important that wasn't important last year?
I think just an added sense of hope and excitement for the future. I think we're moving towards, you know, light and energy and excitement, as opposed to this year of like uncertainty and not knowing what was going to happen. There was a lot of questions and uneasiness and anxiety. So I'm just excited that this new era of music, and hopefully when we get back to performing live shows, that's going to be so much fun. So I'm really looking forward to touring again and all those good things.
Was Songs For You the first project you put out since you went independent?
Yeah, it was. It was.
So how is that, creating that kind of by yourself without the big machine behind you?
I think I'm really proud of Songs For You. I think it's the perfect, and it encompasses exactly where I am in my life and in my career and my creative journey. So to be able to accomplish that sonically while I didn't have the major label machine, I think was a really amazing feat. And yeah, I'm really proud of that album. I was really sad I didn't get to tour it last year. So it's exciting to be able to hopefully play more of those songs this next coming year. It still feels really fresh to me. So that's good.
So what goals have you set for yourself? You know, you've obviously been signed to a major. You're now doing it on your own. Like, do the goals shift at all?
Yeah, I think so. And I think what I think is important has shifted as well. I think when I first got into this industry, a lot of the goals were very based on things that are stats, you know, like a number one album, a Grammy, signed to a major label, all this, that, the third, collaborate with Boom Bam, Boom Bam. But I think that the longer that I've been in the industry, the more that you realize that you can kind of zoom out from those statistics, those numbers, and those specific accolades. And I think now the goal is more so to create the best art, or to be really inspirational to my peers, to show up on a lot of mood boards, to make something that I'm proud of in 10 years. Like, those things are really important now that I maybe wasn't considering.
To show up on a lot of mood boards. So you want to inspire others.
Oh yeah. I think that that's like the ultimate compliment when you hear or you see maybe something that you've done in other artists. That means that you're, you know, an important part of the culture and the zeitgeist. And that's the ultimate compliment as a creative, I think.
I got to remember that, because I hate it. I hate it. When I see somebody doing what I've done, I want to go after them.
You should take it as a compliment. It's a huge compliment.
No, I take it as great. I take great offense to it, and it keeps me up at night, and it makes me question my overall relevancy and if I'm even anymore. It's true. It's sad, but it's true. What do you think?
Well, I got in some sort of internet hole when we were doing research on you, and I found something from like a few years ago that said, you said, I want to go back to making music for fun. Was there a point where it wasn't fun and you just felt like you were just like this thing and you were doing what, you were like a machine or a robot?
No, I don't think I ever felt like that, but I feel like it was the intention behind making music. Like I said, kind of just now, it was more so based on trying to chase like a hit or trying to achieve like something that sounded like it could go on these playlists, or it could be on the radio, or so-and-so would like it, taking into consideration the fans, the media, all of those things, as opposed to just making whatever I wanted to make. Mm. So it's not that I ever felt like I was maybe doing something against my, that like I couldn't control. It wasn't out of control, but I do think that it was maybe a little bit misguided, like potentially for the wrong, not totally wrong reasons, but like some of the wrong reasons.
You think that's why Tuon was so successful? Was that just you? Nobody was saying anything about whispering in your ear, do this, do that?
Yeah, I mean, we made it like in a garage, like on a Thursday night, just happened to, it wasn't a session that the label had set up. It wasn't something that we had all this pressure. At the time, I was doing a lot of sessions with like big name producers like Max Martin and like Stargate, and those guys are awesome. But this was just like, yeah, like me and my friends in like a garage, and that vibe is always magical. Like there's always just something really special about when you don't even try that hard and it just kind of falls together.
Before we get to the guys of Cheat Codes who are waiting in the little Zoom waiting room.
Oh, nice.
What do you take with you from that session that you carry with you to other stuff? Because clearly like it wasn't glossy and it's beyond worked.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think what I've learned the most about having that hit, I guess, is that you can't ever really predict it. That some songs feel like they're going to be that again, and maybe it's not the case. And you can't put the pressure behind every song that's going to have the same outcome. Like when we made that song, we weren't intending like, oh, this is going to be a smash. We were just making what we thought was a vibe. So I feel like having that intention when you're creating music, like this is just what we want to hear. This is a vibe that we're on. I think that's really important.
And on that note, we bring in the Cheat Codes, please. Admit them into the Zoom room, all of them. Hello, everybody.
All right. What up, man? How you been?
Oh, you know, just existing. Let's discuss Lean On Me. How does this record, I talked to Tinashe about it a few minutes ago. How, like, what headspace are we in when we start writing this thing? Or does it really start with production?
I think a lot of times it starts with the concept. Been a crazy year and a half. And the concept of just, something uplifting. And also, I think a lot of people went through this whole year and a half, and maybe some people they thought were friends weren't really there for them during this period. And then they kind of found out who their real friends are or their real support system was. So I think that's kind of like a relatable idea. But yeah, but for us, a lot of times we start ideas with concepts and we kind of go from there, build everything out.
So who goes, let's send this to Tinashe and see what she says.
About what? How the song came about?
like who says, like, a part of you guys, the three of you, that Tinashe, that we should send this to her?
Oh, yeah.
This can make sense.
Tinashe's like, yeah, exactly. what is the reason? We've wanted to do a song with Tinashe for a long time. We've been fans of her music and have always loved the idea of, being able to collaborate on something. So a lot of the time, it's just a matter of finding an idea that works for both of us, something that we can meet in the middle on, and they were able to send it over to her. She did her thing, wrote her verse, absolutely killed it. And yeah, it's one of those things where it's just, I think she was able to connect with it in a way that we were as well, but even though it might not be your normal cup of tea or whatever, yeah, we were able to make something happen.
Would you call this record a normal Cheat Codes record, or is it different than what you were putting out pre-Panorama?
I think that what makes it different is Tinashe and her vocals and how she and like the way what she brings to the table. I guess it's just like her whole different way of performing on the song makes it something special, something that we haven't normally done, I guess. But as far as sonically, I think it sounds like a Cheat Codes song.
Hellraiser's Part One. This is a part of that Part One. What role does this song play in the overall story that you're telling?
The album is actually named after our manager who passed away last year, because he used to call us Hellraisers all the time. Just because I think we annoyed a lot of people in the industry because we always wanted everything we wanted and we didn't want to budge on anything. So he always used to call us Hellraisers. But yeah, he was like a guy in our corner that we could always lean on, and we could always... we knew he would have our backs, even if we kind of came up with a weirdly creative idea that normal people wouldn't do or normal artists or industry standard wouldn't do. So, like we said before, like, we want this song to be uplifting for people. Like, we don't want, it's just, we want people to be positive and be able to go back out in the world and have fun and connect with people and experience that through the music as well.
Is it a compliment to be called a Hellraiser?
For us, it was. For us, it was.
Yeah, I think it's just that. I think it goes, you know, doing what we want to do, not necessarily like going with what we're supposed to do. We're, like a lot of DJs have to, like, I don't know. We just like, no other DJ has done like a 3-part album, I guess, or like where we split it up in different, you know, genres and things like that. So it just like, kind of goes with the idea of being able to, you know, not put ourselves in a box and sort of push the envelope in different ways and to, yeah.
Why is there a need for 3 parts? Why can't it all fit on one? And how long is it all going to be?
There's a lot of songs. So I think that's a big part of it. It was one of those things where when we started Chico's, we've always wanted to do an album since day one. That's been a big thing on our to-do list. And even when we started toying with the idea of doing an album years and years ago, we thought it'd be cool to do a 3-part album, even though we thought it'd be like a, you know, big undertaking. But whenever COVID hit and we had so much time to be in the studio, it was something that we weren't really used to just because we've been touring so frequently since we started, I guess, and didn't really have the time to do a full body of work. And when it was time to sit down and start making all these new songs, we had a big like pile of songs. We were doing so many sessions. We had 30, 40, 50, 60, and it ended up being over 100 songs, you know what I mean? And we didn't want to like just have to pick the 12. We fell in love with so many different types of songs, and we felt like they sort of fit into 3 different groups, and they sort of, you know, each represent like a genre that we all really like grew up with. You know, I've always loved pop music just since day one. I've always been a huge fan of whatever's on the radio, anything that's catchy. And Kevy's always been a huge fan of emo and hip-hop and rap and things like that. That's sort of how Kevy and Matt actually met. And Matt has always been super into dance stuff. He's always been like the one always DJing and things like that, very into creating the live show and things like that. So it felt right. It felt organic to be able to show a little bit of personality and sort of a part for each one of us, I guess.
So 3 parts, 3 different genres. The first part is whose?
Me. Hey.
It's yeah, boy.
Everyone owns this one. Part one is very pop oriented and very just like catchy feel good songs that you want to sing along, want to party to. And yeah, so that's sort of the vibe for part one.
And like, okay, so part one will be 12 songs, part two. So we're talking full albums. Like, this is not like EP or like album light type bull. This is like
playlist, bro.
Yeah, this is real. Exactly.
It's going to be over 30 some songs. So we're going to be doubling our discography in 1 year. Well, so
wow,
it's sort of a big thing that we, you know, it's a lot to process, but we're super hyped on it. And we think that it shows a whole different side of us.
So out of the 30, I mean, we're hoping for one hit, right?
Oh, yeah. I think Lean On Me could be it.
Hell yeah.
Yep.
There are songs that are just cheat codes. One of the new songs that's coming out on the album is called Mathematics, and it's just us. And there's quite a few, actually, on part two and part three that are just us. We have some really cool collaborations on those parts of the album as well that are really exciting. But there's a few that, like, Kevy sings on part two that we're able to show a whole different side of what he's able to do. And it's a whole different vibe for us. So we're able to really show a lot of personality on this. And I think it's going to be pretty exciting being able to show not just having features, but being able to show songs that are just very us and show who we are.
Do y'all feel comfortable giving notes to each other when you collaborate? Like, back to Lean On Me, like, if you have an issue or if you have a creative thought or an idea, is it okay? Is it acceptable to share? Or like, what's the protocol?
Of course. Open.
Yes.
Take it too personally. Oh, sorry, I just should
have said that. No, you say that, but like, do you really mean it?
Yeah, I do. I mean, at the end of the day, we want what's best for the song. That's most important. And so we don't get our ego involved. I think it's a matter of making sure everyone's happy, finding a balance of what sounds for everybody.
Tinashe, did you have any notes?
I just froze. I didn't. What happened? Oh. I don't know.
I hate this. Oh. I have Zoom fatigue.
Zoom.
Dude.
Yeah, Zoom's like the pacing of a conversation is just like not the same.
It's off, dude. It's off. The whole thing's off.
It's always awkward. Did you guys do this song in person, or was this all done over the internet and over Zoom?
This was done all
the sent it back and forth. Yeah. Technology.
Especially during COVID. It was so hard like to really do sessions with people in person the last year. It was just like, you know, everyone was, you know, scared, understandably. So it was just a lot of Zoom sessions and getting used to that was a whole another thing. But we were able to make it work, and luckily we were able to get together and do a music video and photos together and all that fun stuff. So, but beforehand, nothing.
I recorded my part at my home studio.
I didn't realize you were in your home studio. That's awesome.
Yep.
People either love these Zoom sessions or they hate them, right? Like either productivity is through the roof or the energy is totally effing off. Where do you each fall on that spectrum, that scale?
I don't like it. I hate it.
I refuse to do Zoom sessions. I tried one and I was like, not the vibe. But I like doing remote sessions though, like because I'm like kind of an introvert. Well, that's not true, but I do like to make music by myself. Like I like to be in my zone when I'm writing and like making my own art. So I've always made music like in my own house and in my own space. So I enjoy sending back and forth personally.
Yeah, I get that too. It's one of those things where when you're by yourself, you're able to really like sit with your idea. You don't feel rushed. Like in a lot of sessions, you feel like, oh, we have this amount of hours before like
pressure.
And
you want to impress each other. Sometimes that works to your advantage though, but sometimes it's nice to just like be in your own space.
Yeah, totally. I think for me, I'm definitely like more into writing in person than I am with Zoom sessions, just because I feel like you're really catching the vibe, like in the moment, like feeding off each other's energy a little bit better when you're in the same room. But I think there's, you know, benefits to, I guess, Zoom sessions sometimes, but not for me mostly.
You know, you ask Ryan Tedder, he's like, I do 77 sessions a day, man, all day, all day. Okay. But like, each one can't be the same as what it used to be, you know, like you have to see a lack or a softening somewhere if you're upping your productivity so intensely.
I will say Matt does a lot of Zoom sessions and he's like the king of it. Like he has it worked out.
I'm the only one that loves Zoom sessions. Yeah.
He does it good.
I love him because I hate getting dressed. That's like my biggest stress, you know, it's like, I'm going to a session. I'm like, I'm like, what do I wear? I can just wear shorts or like my underwear or whatever.
It's a waste.
Yeah, Matt was doing the most Zoom sessions for sure.
Yeah, and it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool because I don't know. Say I make a beat or something, and then I'm with some writers, and they kind of write for a second, and then they like mute themselves, and while they're writing, I'm like adding to the beat, and then they send me some vocals, and then I send them some extra lyrics, and sometimes I feel like we can write a full song in like a couple hours, whereas like a normal session might be like 4 or 5 hours because you can't have like two audio going on at the same time when you're in the same room. You get what I'm saying? I mean, you could wear headphones, I guess, but it's kind of distracting. Right. You know what I mean? So the idea of like muting and then the breaks thing too. I feel like when you're in a session, you have like a 5-hour session and then everybody wants to break halfway for like a 30-minute lunch that turns into an hour. You know what I mean? On Zoom, you're just like eating while you're working. Like you just walk to the fridge. It's like, I don't know. So I don't know. I had a lot of sessions that we wrote like a full song in like an hour and a half. And I was like, oh, wow. So I have the rest of my day to do whatever I want. Cool.
Efficient, yes. Productive, yes. But will it contain the same energy as if you were doing it in the same room? TBD, right?
Yeah,
right. Yeah, exactly. We'll see. We'll compare all the songs that were written on Zoom and written in person and see how they turn out.
I think I just hate small talk too. So, you know, when you're in a session, like people you don't know, and then you have small talk for like 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's socially acceptable.
I love the small talk.
I'm just
talk,
like,
bro.
Let's just write a song, bro. Like, I don't really care. I like have to be rude, but I don't really care about what's going on. I don't really know you that well.
Oh my gosh!
Like Zoom, it doesn't linger as much. You know, it's more like, hey, you guys got any ideas? Like, what's going on?
Clearly, you set up a safe space to share and to open up your heart and your mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Really let it all out.
Well, I mean, if it inspires a cool concept, but you know how it is. It's like, man, California lockdowns, am I right? And I'm like, yeah, okay, we talk about this every session. Can we get past this and start writing a song?
So do you have dates set for all the other parts here or what?
We're locking in dates right now. They're definitely, it's all going to be this year. So it's all within 2021. I think we'll space them out 3 months apart, or maybe like the last two will be just 2 months apart. I don't know. We're sorting it out, but we're getting really close.
But everything begins with Lean On Me. Why is this the song that is right to kick off this era?
For me, I mean, it's just like, it's my favorite song on the album. It just feels super, super special. I can't get out of my head every time I listen to it. And just working on it, I fell in love with the song. The music video, just the one we shot, it felt amazing. So I don't know. Everything just feels really good about it. It's a gut thing.
And I will say, as someone who didn't sing on the record, I was surprised by how well Trevor and Tinashe's vocals blend together. Because the original version, I think, just had Tinashe, right?
Right.
And then later, So, anyway.
Thanks, bro.
Sounds great.
That second half, I'm like, yeah, I'm always like, oh, yeah. Here we go. Layered vocals. Oh, yeah.
That is a fear a little bit, right? Because, like, God forbid, like, your voices didn't mesh or they just sonically weren't right. It would have thrown the whole thing off.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, though, it's all about what's best for the song. So, I mean, if my voice sounded just like trash on it with her, I'd be like, all right, never mind. Take it away. It's all Tinashe. But luckily we were able to make it, you know, it sounds nice in my opinion. So made it work.
Hellraisers Part 1, that is the first of three albums that are on the way. Link in the description below. Also, Lean On Me is a song. Link in the description below. Click it. Listen to it. Well, final thoughts. What are you thinking?
I think we got it covered.
We've covered a lot here.
We have covered a lot here.
I know, but there's more discussion to do. Come back with Part 2 and Part 3 come out. Lean On Me is the single, though. Tinashe, I appreciate your time and energy.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
It was an honor to meet you.
Nice to meet you. See you guys.
And you three boys.
Bye,
girl.
Thank you, Tinashe.
Hey, love you, bro.
Dude.
We really appreciate you. And, man, it's good to see you.
You guys are amazing. Thank you for giving us time and energy, and I will see you soon because we have two other albums on the way.
Exactly. We'll be in there shortly.
Yeah, dude. Next time we'll be in person, and I think we're going to go see your show on May 8th. So.
Yes!
Oh,
yes!
Nice. Yes!
Giddy up.
Go. I'm pumped.
I'll see y'all.
Is that in Orange County?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Awesome.
Giddy
Thanks
up.
So much, guys.
Dude, send Bye. Me love. Thanks Later. For everything.
Thank you guys so much. We appreciate it.
Bye Trevor, bye Kevy, bye Matt.
Later guys.
Hey, beautiful human, thanks for letting us into your ears today and for hanging out with Tinashe, Cheat Codes, and Dan and myself. We really appreciate it. Please subscribe to our podcast, share it with those you care about, and have a great day. Please be safe, hug your family if you can, and don't go to jail. I'll talk to you soon. Peace and love.